Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. World leaders are descending on New York this week for an upcoming climate summit at the United Nations. At the same time, activists in Boston and cities around the world are planning a climate strike immediately before the summit to demand transformative action on climate change. And the state's four Catholic bishops issued a pastoral letter today calling on the faithful to address climate change. At WBUR, we're airing climate change stories all week as part of Covering Climate Now, a global initiative of over 250 news outlets. Here with us to discuss is David Cash. He's the former commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection and now a dean and associate professor at UMass Boston. David, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
Also with us is Varshini Prakash. She's the Boston-based co-founder and executive director of the Sunrise Movement, one of the major groups pushing for a Green New Deal in Congress. Varshini, thanks for being with us.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And you join us. Is climate change a priority for you? What do you think should be on the agenda? Do you think we're doing enough to fight climate change? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. David, Varshini, we've been talking about climate change for a long time now, decades. Mm-hmm. Are we in a different moment now? And if so, what does this moment mean to you, David?
So I think there's a couple of ways that this is a different moment. I think the science has become ever more clear with the international studies and the national studies last year. I think the youth movements, and of course, Varshini can speak much more to this, have been incredibly exciting. And I think we're finally seeing a major political party in the United States that's really leaning forward on this. And we saw that in the climate forum last week by the Democratic candidates.
Varshini, what's different now and what does it mean for you?
Yeah, there has been so much that's changed in the last year. We are seeing just positively huge traction and movement from thousands of young people and people all across the United States and across the world getting engaged in the fight for a Green New Deal to secure basic rights to clean air and clean water for all people, to engage in global solidarity, to fight for a future that can sustain all of us for generations to come. Just to see a couple of weeks ago, the CNN town hall, 7 hours of television of 10 candidates going up and having to become literate and well-versed in how to fight this crisis was tremendous. And for those of us who have been following this issue for a while, almost unimaginable given where we were just a year ago.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the 7 hours really was...
That was remarkable.
Yeah, it was breathtaking. So, David, there's a UN climate summit beginning in New York at the end of the week, David. Many are skeptical of these kinds of meetings, especially given the way the U.S. has exempted itself from, you know, basically the entire global climate discussion of late. So is the meeting relevant? Is it important?
Of
and
course
what do you
it
expect
is.
To come out of it?
Of course it is. These kinds of meetings are very important. They bring the issue to the fore. They bring the most current topics to a place where people can maybe understand them a little bit better. And they tee up the real decision-making, which is going to be happening in Chile in December at the next UN Conference of the Parties. But what each one of these does, and I think the forum last week illuminated, is that the connection between addressing climate change and the huge opportunities, both for economic development and creating greater equity in our society, not just in the United States, but across the world, has become more and more evident. And I think that's what's exciting people.
So, Varshini, even given what David has said, your group is organizing a climate strike Friday before the talks. Why do that strike, and what are your goals for it?
Right. So, yes, on Friday, September 20th, millions of people will be striking from schools, from businesses, from universities to really call upon our global leaders and leaders in this country everywhere to take this crisis as seriously as our generation does, to treat this crisis really like the emergency that it is. We have spent our entire lives watching politicians pussyfooting around this issue. For those who were born after the year 2000, we have never experienced a year on this planet that was one of the hottest ones on record. We are growing up as the climate generation. And so we are asking ourselves, why go to school? Why participate in society when we have no future to grow up in? And so earlier this year, over 1.4 million...
Let me ask you, though, Varshini, do you really believe you have no future to grow up in? Why go to school?
I think we're at a real crossroads. I think, you know, if you look at what the IPCC, the UN climate reports are telling us, they are saying we just have little over a decade to turn this around, to change the politics in this country and engage on a rapid transformation of our society and economy to get off of fossil fuels and build a renewable energy economy that works for all. So, yes, I do believe that we're at a crossroads. We're already seeing the grim future that is ahead of us. It is filled with increasing and worsening storms, with fires that ruin our neighborhoods and destroy our communities. It is full of climate refugees that are being forced to our border because they cannot grow crops where they live and work and exist with their families. So I think it's kind of a do or die moment, and we need to take action now or the consequences are unimaginable.
All right, let's take some calls with that. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Sandy from Bridgewater, what would you like to share with our guests?
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Go ahead, Sandy.
One thing I would like to share with our guests today is the notion that the scope and sequence of education today is largely different from even just a few decades before. Earth science education used to be comprehensive, and every kid in the state would take it in ninth grade. Nowadays, you're lucky if it's an elective in a high school. At Bridgewater Rainham, we have it as a comprehensive elective as well as astronomy. But a lot of schools, earth science has gone by the wayside, so these kids really don't know the facts.
Thanks for that, Sandy. David, what do you think? Are we not educating ourselves appropriately from a young age and therefore missing a piece of the advocacy that would be critical for change?
Yeah, so there's no question that our education, not just in science in general, but about climate change could be improved. No question about that. And I think part of that relates to the discussions nationally on science in general. And I think one of the most discouraging things about what we see, how the administration, current administration is addressing these issues, is its denigration of the science. Now, we might have laughed last week at the Dorian Sharpie Gate, right? It was a great fodder for late night TV.
When President Trump allegedly drew a circle with a Sharpie to extend the path of the storm.
Correct. And then the attendant responses within the administration, within the National Weather Service, a highly regarded scientific organization. If at the highest levels we're questioning science in this kind of way, it's no surprise that people are coming out of this with the kind of uncertainty and concerns that lead to the problems that Varshini was talking about.
Let's take a couple more calls. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Josh from Plymouth, what would you like to share?
Hi. I just wanted to come to a point of what I believe is a root of climate change and the general degradation of the global environment, and that is unmitigated growth in human population and all the factory farming we're forced to do to support an unsustainable population, deforestation that comes with it, power generation, all of these things. And just to point out, as an example, the continent of Africa had 477 million inhabitants in 1980. There's now 1.2 billion. And the projection by 2050, it'll double to 2.4 billion. So my answer to climate control is education and birth control. Very simple.
Thanks for that, Josh. I'm going to add one more voice. Let's take Alonzo from Cambridge. Alonzo, go ahead.
I grew up in the 70s, and back then it was the ice age is coming, and now it's the science has gone the other way, supposedly. There just isn't consensus on that, so I'm going to push back a little bit on the sky is falling, and we only have 10 years until the Earth ends as we know it.
All right, David, go ahead, and then I'll bring Varshini back in.
Alonzo, and it's kind of interesting because I've heard this response from others, and the real question is that there isn't uncertainty, there isn't lack of consensus. It is hard to find another scientifically important issue that has the breadth and depth of research and support around the world for the things that are happening with climate change. Now, is there going to be disaster in 10 years or in 20 years or in 100 years? Those are still open questions. But is this an incredibly urgent problem that is changing our weather patterns, that is changing our ecological systems, that is impacting our communities? There is no question about that. And anyone who says there's still scientific uncertainty about that is selling you a bill of goods.
Varshini, go ahead, add in.
Right. I would say I think that's a really, really important point. And I think in addition to thinking about, in addition to being clear on the soundness of the science, we also have to ask ourselves, why is there so much confusion in the public about the science? And if you go back to the 70s as well, when we first knew about the science of climate change and we knew how bad it was going to be in 50 years, we also saw that many of these fossil fuel corporations who were making a lot of money burning oil and gas and coal actually had the best science and stifled it and misinformed the public and spent millions of dollars actually buying out politicians to misinform the public about the science as well, because they had to protect their bottom line. And this is well documented. There's decades of evidence on this. And we're also seeing, you know, the influence of dark money, of dollars, big oil dollars in our government corrupting the very democratic mechanisms that are supposed and institutions that are supposed to solve the greatest threats of our lifetimes. So I think it's important to consider, you know, why it is that we have this level of confusion amongst the public when 97% of scientists know that this is happening and that we have a very short timeline to figure it out.
So I want to take another call, but before I do, you know, Varshini, you just said 97% of scientists know this. A CBS poll finds that only 52% of Americans believe that there is a scientific consensus. I want to grab a call, but one of the questions I want hanging out there for us to pick up is, when so few people believe there is a consensus, isn't there work to do there in order to line up, you know, the possibility of big social action? So just kind of keep that in the back of your head. I do want to grab another call. Amanda from Waltham, you're on the line. What do you want to add to the discussion?
Well, I definitely believe that we're in real trouble with our climate. We have to work fast. We have to work hard to fix it. So when I hear your guests saying we're not going to school because there's no point, I'm alarmed, because we need our young people to go to school, because we need them to come up with ways to solve this problem.
And I appreciate your faith in our young people, too, there, Amanda. I mean, they are the generation that we're relying on for so many solutions. Let's take one more call. Mike from Salem, why don't you add your voice to the discussion?
Yeah, this is just another way for people in government to try to control people's lives. They really don't have any solutions. There isn't going to be anything that occurs that we can do anything about in terms of making changes in our lives that have any impact on the environment whatsoever.
So, Mike, does that make you feel hopeless?
No, it's just more gobbledygook of people trying to control people's lives. They're banning straws, they're banning plastic bags, and they all admit that it's not going to do anything. And there's, what are you going to do, take all the cars away from people and take away beef? I mean, it's silliness.
If I may respond, because as was noted earlier, I was in state government and I was part of a team that was in government and in the private sector that developed a whole range of different policies that created the right kind of incentives, not to ban things, but to give people choices and opportunities, in fact, to control their energy cost, to control better the kinds of products that they could use. And in that revolution that we had here, we have seen massive deployment of solar, greater uptake of electric vehicles, which people love having, the opportunity to buy emissions-free electricity. These are all things that have provided options. And the role of government was to create the kinds of incentives and let the private sector run with innovation. And that's one of the reasons why Massachusetts has the most innovative clean tech economies in the world.
So, Varshini, I'm going to turn to you on some of the solutions comments that we've been getting from both the libertarian argument of this is a distraction to we need big solutions. I'm going to use a quote from Elizabeth Warren. This was from her CNN climate town hall, and she was talking about the narrative that the fossil fuel industry has to kind of keep people from focusing on the role that they play. Here she is.
They want to be able to stir up a lot of controversy around your light bulbs, around your straws, and around your cheeseburgers. When 70% of the pollution, of the carbon that we're throwing into the air, comes from three industries.
Okay, so there's a tension there. She later said there that was from an EPA statistic showing that three sectors, transportation, electricity, and fossil fuels account for 78% of America's carbon emissions. But there are also people who do want to make a difference, and they want to focus on straws and plastic bags and paper bags. You're all about social action. So how do you thread the needle between the systemic issues and the local ones? Or is somebody like our caller right that this is a distraction and it's really just about control?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that we have seen over the last few decades how corporations have really sold us a line that it's our fault as everyday people, that we are in this mess, and that the people who will have to clean it up will have to be middle class and working folks who have seen our wages stagnate, who have watched as our economy has experienced skyrocketing levels of inequality over the years. And the Green New Deal and policies like it are about saying, no, this is an investment in the public good. This is about tackling the climate crisis, but also creating millions of good jobs for Americans. This doesn't have to be about taking things away. This is about building our economy together and tackling our greatest problems at the same time. Now, I will say we are working on a short timeline here, and we are kind of at an all-hands-on-deck moment. So I think the best way to get involved in making a difference in your local community is actually to get involved in movements like Sunrise Movement. We have a fantastic chapter in Boston that every single day meets with young people and gets high schoolers, middle schoolers even, and others to be involved in the movement to stop the climate crisis. And by actually linking arms with our neighbors and our community members, the problem becomes a lot less monstrous and a lot more digestible, and we're able to tackle it in our own communities.
Let's take another call. We've got Ryan from Rockland on the phone. Ryan, what do you have to say?
Hi. Yes, I'm a younger voice. I'm here. I'm 20. I'm watching this climate change, and I'm watching these weather patterns get scarier and get harsher. And I don't understand why there is still a discrepancy in the public opinion when I'm not the only one watching this happen. I guess my generation is the only one scared enough to be so loud about it.
Thanks for that call, Ryan. And I can hear your fear, right? I hear the anxiety and the frustration in your voice. David, let me let you address
that. Ryan, if it's any solace, I'm scared too. And I'm in a generation older than you. And I think there are many in my generation who are looking back at the last several decades, realizing that we haven't moved as quickly as we could, and trying to figure out how to create the kind of government and policy and society in which people will not only understand the risks that they face, but band together to make the kinds of decisions to move forward. And I got to say, you know, I spent some time this summer traveling around the West and the Midwest. And when you go through the Great Plains that along the Mississippi Valley and Missouri River that were hit by floods this past year, and at the same time, you see some areas where there are wind farms as far as the eye can see, you know that there are people that are now understanding that what both the threats are and what the opportunities are.
So before we run out of time, go ahead, Varshini. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond. Thank you so much, Ryan. I see you. And I think we have to be reminded of, in this moment, our power as young people. The reason why there are dozens of politicians who have signed on to the Green New Deal resolution in the House, the reason why presidential candidates are talking about the climate crisis and making it a top priority going into the election, the reason why the polls are rising and this is becoming a top one, two, and three issue for American voters is because of the advocacy, the activism, the tenacity, and the relentlessness of young people in this moment. So get involved. We need you. And we've seen what the difference we can make in just a year, and who knows what this next year is going to bring if we continue fighting.
All right, so we are almost out of time, but before we go, I want to ask each of you, is there a candidate in the 2020 presidential race who is distinguishing themselves on climate from your perspective? Varshini, I'll let you go first briefly.
Sure. I mean, I think there are a number of them at this point. I think top of the pack end up being folks like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, certainly holding some of the most ambitious climate platforms and also the ones who have been out in the public talking about it the most.
And David, are those the same two on your list?
You know what? I got to say, and I'm not just being cute here, I think it's remarkable that the strength, particularly of the 10 that were on last week, the strength that they have in pushing the climate agenda, whether they're looking at the science, asking questions about equity that have never been asked before, connecting climate to things like agriculture and transportation, which has not been done previously, and then fundamentally seeing climate change as interconnected with economic opportunity. I think all of them are talking about that. And just to be, you know, somewhat nonpartisan, we see that in governors, in Republican governors around the country as well. This is not something only owned by Democrats. It historically has been something that both parties have agreed to, and we see that in our own state. We have a governor who leans forward on climate as well.
All right. David Cash is the former commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection and now a dean and associate professor at UMass Boston. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
And Varshini Prakash is the co-founder and executive director of the Sunrise Movement. Varshini, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
To see more from WBUR's Covering Climate Now series, you can go to our website, radioboston.org. Meanwhile, stay with us, because coming up, should the Patriots have played Antonio Brown yesterday knowing he's facing allegations of rape and sexual assault? We'll take your calls. I'm Tiziana Dearing. This is Radio Boston.